Hello, everyone. Welcome to Squares the Cube, a multidimensional podcast where we discuss and ramble about MTGQ. My name is Alex, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Ryan Bemrose. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Great. Thank you, Alex. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. How was your Tuesday going today?
It's going quite good here in Portland. We got a little bit of snow and an icy rain, and I got the opportunity to do an MTGO draft today.
Very cool. That is awesome. We also have a second co-host in Jesse. Jesse, how are we doing today?
Pretty good. Also cold, but I'll survive.
Survive, yeah. You still got your heat on, right?
Oh, thank God, yes.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people without heat. I know, Ryan, you've been struggling with some internet access here the last couple of days, right?
Yes, but power has been great.
Good deal. Well, hey, everybody, this is a brand new MTG podcast for Cube that we are starting up. We are doing this as an experiment to just kind of see how it goes. We're doing this a little bit differently than some of the other podcasts that you may have listened to, where it's going to be a little bit more freeform and a little bit more of a just organic discussion about Cube. A little bit less templatey than some of the other podcasts, and we're just going to try to do this a little bit differently. We do intend to start each week, though, by talking about what cubing we have been doing for the week. So Ryan, you had already said that you had played a little bit of MTGO Cube today. Have you been doing any other cubing this week that's been, anything else that you've been playing?
No, sadly, I got snowed in. I was trying to do on the MTGO Cube a variant of either the Scape Shift, Ranoop, Strip Mine plans, or I was trying to do a variant of Doomsday, as you and I were talking about that earlier, and neither of those went well.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. What exactly were you pairing up with the Doomsday, then?
I was trying to do the full blue-black Esper plan. I got the Oracle, I got the Doomsday, but I failed to find the reliable Gush or draw package, so I just kind of had to survive for 5 turns, and that never worked out.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that. That is no good.
It was terrible. A nice 0-3.
Oh, no. We definitely, I'm the 0-3 king these days, I feel like, especially when we've been drafting your cube here recently.
Just luck, good sir. Just luck. Your times are coming.
I hope so. Jesse, what have you been doing for Cube this week?
Oh, I probably should have cubed less and been responsible more, but I've been cubing my brains out. We've got the big event coming up near Seattle in March, and I've just been putting repetition upon repetition in paper with a couple of my buddies here at home. And then last night also got to take part at the Wayward Games. Got our paper cube from PNW Cube Drafts going on there. Got to play the lovely Alex's, our host, cube and paper, and lose pretty fantastically with a deck I thought was going to do really well. We don't have to talk about that ever again. Moving on.
We don't, if you don't want to. I know that's, you know, like Ryan was saying, sometimes the decks are painful and we don't have to relive the memories, right? So right. Yeah, we were very fortunate enough that last night we got to do a draft of my cube. We do meet here in the Portland, Oregon area weekly, actually up in Vancouver, Washington, which is just over the river. So everybody always calls it Portland. We meet Monday at Wayward Games at 6 o'clock and do cube drafts that are open to anybody who's interested in coming to join us. If you hear this and you're ever in the Portland area traveling or visiting or just like to come cube, we'd be more than happy to have you. And so we've been rotating through some different people's cubes, and this week happened to be my main unpowered vintage cube, and we did a draft of that. And that's really the only cube that I've been drafting this week. I've been building some other cubes in the background, but the only cubing I did was on Monday night.
So, I'll have to say, if you're in the area, regardless of whether there's a cube draft going on, go see Joe at Wayward Games. That place is amazing.
Absolutely. That is a great shout out. Yeah. Sorry, Ryan, I cut you off there.
No, it is an amazing shop. It has got some great luxury space, the layout's great, and it's got a ton of different varieties of games, including Disney's Lorcana.
Yeah, and actually, I think Lorcana is meeting up on Tuesday nights, as we say that, so Tuesdays are a great day to go there if you are, a Lorcana fan as well. So, cool. Well, that is kind of what we've been doing for Cube this week. The next thing that we're going to kind of talk about each week is just either some new cards that have been released, or you know, cards that we're considering for our own cubes. And we just actually, right hot off the presses today, got a new announcement about some stuff that's upcoming in the new Ravnica set here in February. A very spicy land cycle Jesse, do you want to talk a little bit about that, what we just got for some fun new lands today that just came out?
Well, see, I'm definitely on the pulse of things because I totally knew about these when you messaged them to me. I'd already been looking into them and thinking through whether or not I'd put them in my own cube, obviously, being a very professional co-host. But after looking at them for the not the first time when you sent them to me, I think they are in a really healthy place to go into a cube that isn't heavily focused on like degenerate combo. Then being tutorable obviously is extremely valuable. And now that a lot of cubes are starting to move into having the land cyclers as well, these dual typal, dual lands that come into play tapped are, you know, kind of a favorite card to hate among powerful Magic players, I like to think. They're definitely, I think there's some love for the ones they can come in untapped, but Surveil is a powerful mechanic, especially when so many cards want cards in the graveyard now. Turn one fetch land into surveilling for one, fixing your mana, putting two cards in the yard off the rip, and enabling cards, enabling cards like Murktide Regent really early and other degenerate, you know, graveyard-based strategies. These, they feel decent enough to go into quite a few cubes, as long as you're not trying to encourage snap off turn 2-3 storm. They don't know if they have a home and cubes that powerful.
No, that's fair. And just to kind of give a little bit more clarification on what these were, they were a series of duels that are typed. And so obviously, like Jesse was saying, that they are fetchable. They do intertapped, but they do allow the player to surveil one when they ETB. And so, yeah, I definitely agree. I think it does a lot of interesting things, especially in any of the colors that care about Graveyard Shenanigans or Reanimator. There's definitely a lot of room for these to do some interesting things, and I'm excited to take a look at them. Ryan, have you thought about these at all? I mean, literally, they've been out for less than 12 hours at this point. Is this something that you're going to consider running in your vintage cube that you have? Is this anything that catches your attention?
Unfortunately, since my cube's so hyper-focused on the size being at 450, I think, unfortunately, these do not hit the power level that I'm looking for. I think these fit really well in a legacy cube maybe a vintage cube, but especially if the vintage cube's heavy on the land side, I do not think these fit well in my type of cube where, like I said, it's a little bit more focused on just being overly powerful.
Sure.
Coming into play tapped is not amazing, and the Surveil is great for specific decks like Reanimator, especially hypothetically flipping Echo of Eons and super situations like that. But for the most part, that come into play tapped effect, I think, is a huge downside. And I still think the Trihomes have a higher upside for splashability, which outweighs these, is how I would see it.
Well, and in your list, too, when you're running the lands, do you do uniform cycles through and through mostly, or do you break up the cycles depending on the color pairs with your list?
Currently, the only thing that's been broken up are the Horizon lands. So I could hypothetically be seeing replacing the Horizon lands with these. But again, I don't think the power level of these is anywhere in comparison to those.
No, that's definitely fair. That's what I'm kind of interested about, is I think they're going to be an interesting cycle. And, you know, obviously a few years back, we got some other type of lands that in both, I think, were the snow lands from Kaladesh. Those were typal, I believe, that also ETB tapped with no other upside. And we also got a similar cycle in the recent Dominaria set from a couple of years ago as well, Dominaria Reunited, that again had no other upside with just the come into play tap with typal, and obviously wasn't good enough to get people's attention, right, for cube?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will pick up a set of these, though, just in case to have in a swapple aside.
Sure. No, the other growing cube problem, right? If new cards come out and we have to have them in the binder just in case for swapping stuff out in our cubes. So The Eternal Fight, yeah.
Forever. My wallet.
I was going to say, I've been starting to break up the cycles just a little bit in my own list, just to see some different fast lands or some of the different, the slow lands were the checks to make sure that they have three. I've been messing around with that a little bit, and so I'm curious to see if maybe some of the blue-black or green-black cubes in my list are going to be, or decks in my cube list are going to be interested in trying these out. But, you know, obviously just starting the podcast here tonight, these things come hot off the press. I kind of had to make these the first thing that we talked about just because they're, you know, some more of the bigger dual lands that have been shared in Magic here in just a quick minute. So,
Yeah, I cannot believe they spoiled more duels so soon. Like, I thought we got very spoiled with Trihomes. Very, very spoiled. Overly spoiled as the dinosaur player that I am. And yet here we are again, less than years.
Well, I think because they've been such a big success, especially with, like, the MTGO Cube, you know, being a major player in that, and also things like some of the domain stuff that's been popping up a little bit in Cube recently. I mean, it only makes sense that they're going to try to push this envelope a little bit more, right? Like, do you guys think that we see more type of lands like this coming out in the future, or, like, has the seal kind of been popped, or...
I think we're locked in. I think they're going to, the power creep will continue to grow to just insane levels.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also curious if there's anything else they can do with the types, because currently the types have no real game impact in current R&D anyway, aside from just being fetchable. The days since, like, you know, Wild Nacatl referencing you controlling them, such like that, like, I don't really see a lot of benefit in continuing to provide us these type of lands once we've already gotten enough saturation of affordable ones to make decks playable. You know, between these and Triumphs, we're probably getting there, and Shocks aren't that expensive. So I feel like they're going to need some sort of design reason to have them soon, because, you know, you're not getting fetches back in Standard unless they break their promise. So I'm hoping they start to design around these types a little bit more, because they haven't in quite a long time.
Definitely. That's kind of like an older design, you know, that we haven't seen with, especially since, like, things like Rafelos or whatnot for green, right? Where, like, we care about things potentially being forest and a dual color land. So maybe that's, yeah, maybe that's more the thing, like, that we need some more cards that care about typal specifically for design to make these things more relevant than just being fetchable. So, sorry, Ryan, I cut you off there. What were you about to say?
No. I was going to say it would be interesting to see if they introduce somehow, like, a waste subtype or some other new subtype to the lands. I'm sure we'll see that to some degree. Maybe the unknown purple color.
Oh, no. Please, no.
I do wonder, that is a question, if we will ever get Wastes X dual lands.
Oh, man, would that be a thing?
Probably,
right?
The next time they ever bring the Eldrazi back, right? Like,
right.
Is that...
There would have to be a cycle of five, I assume, and just waste per color. Waste Wooburg dual lands. That could be interesting. Because currently, if you want to support, no, not so much support, but if you want to build around a deck that wants to play summon cube like Eldrazi Displacer, you're either in this awkward place of having to put Wastes in your cube, or make sure there's enough non-basic lands in your cube, or, you know, efficient mana rocks that make Wastes. I know a lot of cubes are on the pain lands, but plenty of them aren't anymore. So it would be nice to have some fetchable mana for some of these powerful Waste cards. I know the reason Reality Smasher is never going to make my cube is that I'm not going to put Wastes in the land piles. So.
No, sure. It's funny that you say that, because I did recently add Eldrazi Displacer and made a small pile of about 5 to 10 Wastes that were available for players in the land station, that was something they were interested in. So, you know, obviously something a bunch of other cubers do as well. But yeah, definitely a little bit different.
Completely open to them, Alex, unrelated to the draft. Like, they just had 5 ways that were available.
Yeah, any player could just, like, and a couple of reasons for that as well is, like, some things like Field of the Dead, right, where you're looking for differently named lands, or if just for some reason you wanted a colorless land, you know, for any other reason. Like, it just is like, here are some ways if you, for some reason, want to run these, let your creativity go wild, right? Not that I'm necessarily giving them any other options at the moment other than Eldrazi Displacer, and I do have some of the pain lands in my land cycles as well, currently, just to help facilitate that, as well as, like, Jesse was saying, some mana rocks, but just, you know, to give players the ability to be a little bit more creative with that. So,
but you're, if no, I may, yeah. I apologize for cutting you off, good sir, but are you not running Thought Not?
No, I don't
Smasher?
Have any of the other,
or
not
Reality
yet.
Smasher? Thought Not.
Yeah, so there isn't like the full Eldrazi, like, archetype. It's just more, Displacer has a lot of interesting things you can do with the blink mechanic with that, that's controllable for protecting your own stuff. It's not some, you know, other, unlike things like Soul Herder and stuff, where it happens just at a specific phase or a triggered time. Just being able to do it at instant speed seemed like something that would be interesting to give players, you know, the control around, especially as I think cards like Flash have become more interesting in Cube here in the last little bit of time, that we've got more targets that we want to ETB and to flash in for different abilities. It just kind of seemed like something to kind of play around within that space and give people the option for. And so I just to kind of do something a little bit different. So I'm curious to hear back on just a second here. You guys were talking about the concept of doing like a waste plus land type, which seems really interesting. I know that Mark Rosewater has spoiled pretty heavily that there's going to be, and that a lot of the promotional material for Modern Horizon 3 this summer has had the Eldrazi material on it. So kind of prediction time. Do you think that maybe we see something in that vein this summer with Modern Horizons 3 that like we get these, you know, waste matters, lands, kind of colorless theme with Eldrazi's when that comes up? Is that something we could see?
Interesting. I mean, at that point, I would be admitting that R&D has much as much creativity as I do, and that's hurtful to my ego. But, man, it's possible. I do feel like that would be a pretty big, like, sudden attack, because adding waste to the dual type, like I said, while it would be interesting, I feel like they first need to foray back into just designing around the land types we currently have. Because it would be a pretty big leap to go from not only not designing around the five Wooburg land types, which, like we said, we haven't done it in a long time, to not only designing around land types again, but doing it with the sixth and least popular land type and making a set of duels to enable it. Like, that's a jump. So if they were to do that, I would almost prefer to see some cards come out in the next set that refer to the Wooburg land types. And then maybe in the second set, assuming Wizards continues to make two sets that are similar related to each other, maybe then do it. I don't know. It seems like a huge leap.
The hard thing about Modern Horizons 2, right, being that it's not actually one of the regularly scheduled sets for premium sets for Standard, right? So
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, they've been talking about, I know Rosewater's talked about trying to do more themes across the year because they don't do the blocks anymore. And so they're trying to tie things together across things like the where we're starting with Karlov Manor here, and then we're going into the Wild West theme set, and they've been looking like they've been spreading, you know, the dual land cycles across sets like that, where they'll do five in one set or six in one set and four in the other set. But being Modern Horizons, that would be the tricky thing, is that kind of is the place where they just like crack the vault open and go wild. And so that's where, you know, you're talking about just doing something out of the blue and random. I think that would, maybe that's where we would see something like that, and that'd be pretty different. So
that would be the set for it.
Yeah. Before we go too far off this topic, though, did you guys have any other things that you wanted to say about these lands in particular, or lands, before we either go into other tangents or we kind of start with our main talking point for the night before we branch off into wherever we want to start talking about?
I've got the only two land cycles I think that Magic from its history hasn't ever finished out are both the Urborg and Yamamaya forest lands, correct? Right? So we don't have an island version of that, nor do we have a mountain version of that, nor do we have a plains version of that. All by it's also just the Horizon land cycle, which is missing four of the six.
One other cycle. There is a third cycle. The bicycle lands from Amonkhet have never had the enemy color cycles, which is where I know some people were, when they couldn't do the full Horizon land cycle, obviously were filling those in with the bicycle lands in some cubes or some lists. But yeah, I think those are the three cycles that I am aware of that they have yet to finish. I'm sure there's some other stuff out there too, right? But as far as like dual color land cycles, those are the three that I'm aware of off the top of my head. And this is actually a great point to say that, listeners, if we miss things or talk about things at the end of the episode, we will give you the email for the show. If you hear things like this along the way and like want to comment in or send emails to correct us, we would love to interface with people with our ramblings as much as possible. So you can definitely write in and tell us if there are other things that we have not said here. We'd be happy to mention this stuff later along the way, too, if that gets brought up. So.
As soon as you said that, the only thing in my mind was just the meme of someone pushing the glasses up their nose. Just actually.
Yep. Exactly. I mean, come on. Don't we love to do that as like Magic players and specifically Cube players, where we get to critique people like that, right? Like,
actually, kind of, I'm a Magic the Gathering player.
Exactly. So
let me judge you out of the game real quick.
Well, if you guys will let me, that is the perfect segue to kind of talking about what we wanted to talk about today. So are you guys ready to make that jump then into that other transition?
I'd love to.
The only Only last thing I wanted to ask about or add was the last quick lookup from Modern Horizons 2. Out of the 10 most expensive cards, almost 7 of those 10 are in cubes, including all of ours.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So the power level of Modern Horizons 2 being reduced, introduced again with newer cards.
Well, especially even for like peasant cubes and stuff too, some of the uncommons that were there. And the only thing I'm going to be interested in with Modern Horizons 3 is that they've said that there's going to be a big theme on double face cards, which I know don't always catch cube designers fancy. So that's going to be interesting to see if there's something like 44 new or 45 new cards is what they've said for sure. Correct me if I'm wrong again, internet, please, because again, I'm very fallible. But my understanding was a lot of those were going to be double face cards, which is going to be interesting if that's the case.
Yeah, we cannot wait.
More fun things for us to talk about in the future. Well, cool. Well, we are going to do again, just each week we're going to talk about, like we said, kind of what we've been cubing, talk about some new cards that we've been interested in adding to our own cubes or just, you know, things we've been playing with. And then we are going to have kind of a main subject to start our ramblings from again. Where we go from there, who knows? And that's where the fun of the show is that we're just going to kind of keep organically talking about all things cube. But we wanted to kind of discuss a major topic that comes up a lot in the cube community. And one of the things about the cube community is that we're a very fragmented group of people. We all have very different experiences with the cubes that we have available to us to draft within our local play groups. You know, what we design, and because cube is such a sandbox environment, nobody is really ever having the same experiences across the board with cube unless they're doing something like the MTGO cube or the Arena cube, where it's a cube that really does have reach for a lot of people in the cube community. So something that comes up quite often then is that we are constantly being introduced to these novel environments that are different, that are unique, and that are going to be something that we may have not seen before. And so what we kind of wanted to talk about this first week with our first episode is approaching talking about somebody's cube for the first time with them that's new, making suggestions about if they ask, like, hey, what did you think about my cube? And just kind of player feedback in general when it comes to the entire cube community. And I know that both Jesse and Ryan have some great examples from their own cubes and some stuff that they've gone over before or run into. I know especially Ryan. So Ryan, I'm going to kind of call on you first here. You do something super unique with your cube when it comes to the drafts that you do with that cube. And you allow players to give a lot of feedback on a lot of different options that you have available to them. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, about how you structure some of your cube drafts and some of the different things that you give players as an availability to that may be a little bit different than a typical cube draft?
Yeah, absolutely. So I won't ramble too much, and if you guys ever want to see my cube list, it is listed on the PNW Facebook group, and you guys can go check that out later. The cube doesn't have an amazing introduction like some Alex or Jesse's does, but my cube is focused on numbers. I am hyper focused on specific numbers and even numbers, or having all numbers be even to a certain degree. So my cube is based on that, and it is a correlation of both the vintage cube and the most also followed powered cubes on Cube Cobra. Next, Alex, the other two things I introduce to the cube is I offer people Cogwork Librarians at the beginning from a voting level to see if people would like to play with that or not play with that. And I also have the ability to add Storm into the cube as a pack choice. Storm's not exactly a fun archetype. This has been resonated across many, many cube channels and other podcasts, I'm sure. And in short, it's not always the funnest thing, but people like to have it as an option. And then finally, I give the players, if we have enough time before my draft, the option to vote in certain combos. So I play with very powerful cards like Moat. Maybe that card isn't very fun. Or Jesse was just mentioning earlier in a different conversation, we were talking about White Plume Adventure just being so freaking powerful, right? So if people decide they don't want these cards in the cube, I have almost every variation of card that has ever cycled in and out of the vintage cube or out of other people's cubes in my possession, and I can swap those cards in and out to make other combos work or to make the players happy. Alex, the biggest thing for me when I cube is I've been playing Magic for so long, I want players to just have fun with the most powerful cards ever, but I want it to be a unique experience, right? I don't want them to be bored playing the same cube over and over.
No, and that's one of the things about your cube that's, like, honestly the most fun, is that we have so many different versions or variations on it that we can do, and, you know, cubes in general change over time. But allowing players to make, you know, decisions right then and, you know, there before we even start the cube is something that's really cool. So you do a really good job of listening to players and taking their feedback. And you kind of mentioned on that a little bit why you thought it was so important, is that you want people to have a good time, right? That you know, obviously, if people aren't having fun, then why are we doing this thing? And so what are some of the more constructive ways that people give you that feedback when they're talking about, you know, I want to run this card over or Y card, like giving you like specific examples is sometimes helpful. What are some other things the players do sometimes that are more helpful to you as a cube designer, rather than just saying like, hey, I don't like this card, it's not fun, I don't want to play it?
To me, it's majority also wins. So like, it's always a player's vote. So like, hey, this card has been unfun, or I really dislike this card, or I had a really negative experience with it. And then other players would chime in and say, yeah, when he had Moat out there, I forgot I didn't have any main deck enchantment removal, and I was just dead. So situations like that, while I like having the most powerful cards in the cube, again, I want people to come back without that sour taste in their mouth. And Jesse, I think, has a much better way of explaining this than I do, because he curates his cube in that same way, except even better. But for me, I'm all about player experience, but and from a majority level, right? I don't want one single player being like, hey, I really dislike Black Lotus, I think it's too powerful, just because I haven't drafted it ever. I feel like that would be too much to oversee. And I haven't ever introduced to like, hey, you 3-0'd, you can vote a card in or out, because I don't want the inconsistency of the numbers. But as long as the numbers stay and the color pies correctly, I'm usually happy.
I do have to tease you about that, because like I said, I've been breaking up some cycles, and I know that a conversation that we've had before that I'm sure will come up many a time is that I am certainly okay with cube not being a perfect, you know, square number format, where I will run different number cards in my gold section, which I know is just blasphemy to some people in cube that love perfect, that like perfect sections and perfect stuff, which is also kind of the beauty of cube, right? That we can do all these different creative things, and it's such a sandboxy format that we can create whatever environment we want our cubes to look like, as long as, you know, our player bases are happy playing with them. Which, you know, so let me bring Jesse into this conversation a little bit. Jesse, you do a lot of like smaller drafts with your cube a lot, where you do a lot of one-on-one drafting that's either like a Houseman draft or a grid draft. And so, you know, when you're doing that, you kind of play with a little bit of a smaller player pool sometimes with your cube. How does that affect the way that you take feedback from people that are so intimately playing with your cube when it's kind of one-on-one like that?
To be honest, it's going to sound maybe negative here because everything has been so positive, but the face of it is that I straight up don't typically. What it is, I take notes. So if, you know, it's my buddy Brandon and Patrick that get the most iterations of my cube, often in 1v1 or a three-player setting where we'll just, you know, do round robin afterwards. And so the cube sees a lot of different varieties of drafting. I do a lot of Winston, Houseman, grid drafting, 9 packs of 5 when we're 3 players. Lots of drafting variation, which I like for making sure that it works in those different shapes and seeing how it behaves. But I don't feel like a singular person's view is enough to make a change. So what I do is I note their input. And only when it is echoed by a full 8-man table a couple times do I start to really hone in on, okay, well, maybe this is true. Because as, you know, he mentioned, as Ryan brought up with the outlier of someone not thinking Black Lotus should be in the cube because, ooh, scary. I don't want that, like, singular bias to be making me make decisions. So I just kind of pay attention to when the opinion of the people who know my cube the most intimately and the masses who get to play it occasionally start to correlate. I usually suspect there's a problem. And then I'll either, you know, make the change or maybe even ask the people making the complaint what they would change. Or look to my compadres here who have excellent cubes of their own to see what they have in the slot. But yeah, no, I typically try not to make decisions just based off that smaller card, that smaller information pool.
Smaller input from just one person. So that's kind of something that it sounds like you guys have in common then, where again, it's multiple people, you know, input is the, you know, Ryan was saying the majority of rules when, like, if more people want to play a specific card when they're voting, for either trying something out or whatnot. And again, you're saying a similar thing that when it comes to making changes and feedback, then obviously it's not just one person that has a lot of influence over your cube, but if a group as a whole, or if the cube community is running something more or less, that's what sways you in one direction or another then, right?
I think, yeah, I mean, exactly. Specifically, I think this calls home to kind of what we're getting at, which is the point of cube, and why I think we're talking about how to criticize a cube in the first place, which is that the point is fun. I don't design my cube to make it hyper efficient. The cube's point isn't to be balanced. Mine happens to also be closer to Ryan's than yours in balancing, but
yeah.
It has far more to do with the experience I want the people whom I deign to spend my time with to have. And since I don't make a habit of cubing with my enemies, I always want them to have a good time. So I want that criticism to come from that same place, right? So if I notice even that someone's criticism seems to be coming from them thinking they would win more if X was missing or X was included, that input almost doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't care about you winning. Sorry, you have the wrong attitude for this environment in the first place. I'm here to make everyone have a good time. So when your input is, you know, like, this card really struggled to perform because of Y, and I ended up not being able to, you know, play the game, or my opponent was able to, you know, put me out of the game in such a quick and uninteractable way. Here's what happened. Here's why. Well, then I start to hear that my players didn't have fun, which bothers me far more than card is too good, too bad, one way or another.
So is that way a way then that if somebody that was more of like an individual coming to you and wanted a specific card to either go into your cube or to get cut from your cube, if they were going to make that argument to you and approach you with that, if they came at it from more of a "this is why I would have fun" perspective, that would obviously have more weight with you, like you're saying, and would have a better chance of that card potentially making it into your list. Then, right?
I think I would like to say that I can speak for all of us when I say yes. Framing something in such a way that you're wanting not just the health of the cube itself to be better, but the health of the people partaking of it. I think that's the kind of camaraderie that cube was built around in the first place. I mean, Magic honestly was built around it. Commander, which is the father of cube, was built around it. It's just people wanting to have fun with each other. So yeah, exactly. Great. And that's definitely the best framing you could come to me with is here's the kind of fun I think this card could create, or here's the kind of fun this card is preventing. I'm definitely more likely to listen to your input that way.
Very cool, right? I mean, again, we were talking that it was somewhat similar, but are there other approaches that people could approach you with kind of the overall group and voting system that would be a better approach to get, you know, their case heard to make a card either played or not played, other than just, like we were saying, kind of group mentality or, you know, potentially, hey, this is why I would have fun. Are there other arguments that would potentially sway you or work for you as to why a card should be in your cube?
There definitely might be. So while I will be listening to player levels, we do have quite a variety of players that draft my cube, which also makes sure that I can see both new and old archetypes and just completely different archetypes, so that the cube player variety is always different. So in all of this notes, the only thing I really wanted to follow up or mention on is that I will ask players to choose if there is a card they see in the draft that they personally don't understand why it's still there from a power level, like maybe a Termagoyf situation, or maybe like a Necropotent situation, or maybe they're just not sure why that card's there. If enough players have brought that particular card up from a variety of situations or variety of drafts, I'll mentally note that. And then secondly, if certain cubes on the Cube Cobra site have just included a certain set of cards, be sure that I'll be following that or close to following that list, especially if it's changing out a specific archetype or something of that level. I will always introduce powerful cards to the cube first, and then if I hear they're unfun or I hear they're not very player friendly, then I'll pull them. But I'm always looking for the most powerful cubes versus that, like, hey, I want you to have a really interesting, fun time cubing tonight.
Sure. Are there other places just besides people's cubes lists that you guys look for cards for your list? Like, are there other, you know, formats or websites or anything else that you guys specifically go looking for? Other card suggestions and stuff too, kind of why we're just talking about the subject of swapping cards in and out for people who might be listening for like, hey, where do I go look for, you know, potential cards to change in and out of my list that I have? Or are there other places that you guys take inspiration from for your cubes other than just player suggestion?
I know the main one for me is Legacy and Canlander lists, specifically the competitive ones. I mean, Canlander is often described as constructed cube. I definitely feel like a lot of the cards that are good enough to be played at the highest level of Canlander can pretty much be one-for-one interchange with most cube cards. Obviously, there's some random outliers where if you're playing a very specific, hyper-fixated 100 cards, you might have five or six cards in your deck that are just there because they're the 45th and 46th best version of that synergy. But more often than not, the power level is extremely high. I mean, these people are also playing with Lotuses and Time Walk and such. The power level can't be Hill Giant. So Legacy and Canlander list for sure. And then also just CEDH a little bit. I feel like that doesn't move as much, so I'm not usually getting very many ideas from there. But when I hear the meta has shifted, I'll usually check and just see what insane card I didn't realize was a thing.
Anytime.
But yeah, those are probably the go-tos for me.
Anytime.
Aside from Cube Cobra.
Anytime there's a CEDH tournament, especially in another country, I'm right there with you, Jesse. Like, and there's some new introductions of cards or different versions of cards. I'm checking those lists out because those cards usually have just enough power level to fit Cube or might be an EDH commander card that has the power level to hit that Cube. So I completely agree on the CEDH and the Legacy Life for sure.
Very cool. So we've talked, just to change the subject here a little bit, we've talked about now some of the ways that like people have given, if they give like a positive response as to like, hey, I think this card, you know, should be added. And like we said, community voting and stuff like that. Let's talk about the reverse a little bit. What if people come to you more with, like you guys were saying, some of the things that don't tend to work so well for you, like that, like, hey, my win rate would be better, or I feel like I could be more competitive if this card was or wasn't here. How do you guys deal with some of that input that players give? And, you know, is it even helpful when players do stuff like that? Like you were saying, it usually doesn't tend to change the cards that are in your cube list. So does it, you know, what does that do to the overall process of just like feedback from player to cube designer on how the cube gets changed?
Brian, you want to lead?
Yeah, sure. So for me, this one comes down to player based. Right. We're all making sure that the player had a good time with not just the people they were cubing with, but the tournament itself. So I would dig into what happened in the tournament, why they feel this particular way about it. Right. Was it they mulliganed to five every single game and they never hit their second land drop? Or was it a specific instance where, you know, Jesse just top decked the perfect reanimation spell and that's what ended him, right? Like, I'd like to dig in specifically and isolate if it was a bad player experience or if it was more of a self-created bad experience by them. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I think so, right? Like, did they have potentially agency over what happened to them or was it just something that happened off of random chance, right?
Exactly. Because there's variance in Magic. That's the biggest and huge, one of the largest reasons we play it, right? There is luck and just variance.
And all the crazy stories that comes out of that, right?
Exactly.
Jesse, did you have something to add on that? It sounded like you had something you might have wanted to say there.
I mean, specifically if someone comes to me saying, you know, X needs to be included, and their argument has to do with their own performance, I'm not going to think too much of it, honestly. Now, like you said, if there's some sort of framing like I could have gotten out of this situation X if I had card Y, you know, like I felt like I couldn't interact with Trunium Nemesis because your cube is lacking sac effects or board wipe effects. That is, you know, I don't know, really this, they're framing it differently, but they're still saying they had an uninteractive, unfun time. So like my brain's always kind of like going to frame it into you didn't have fun, unless you're being like extremely analytical, where it's like, well, I went 1-2 tonight, and I know I could have got game 3 and 4, you know, if XYZ happened. And at that point, I think I'm just not interested in what you have to say, frankly. Again, this was going to come to maybe being a little negative, but the people I want to play with in the cube I'm trying to build is definitely more about the experience. Not so much, you know, who gets to win, how often do you get to win. So as long as they're being respectful and, you know, explaining why they could have won, there's a very good chance that I'm still going to hear it as, here's how I could have had more fun, here's how my, you know, here's how this could have worked better. Because a lot of the situations do end up being, I didn't have fun. I mean, that's why they're angry in the first place, is they didn't win, or they're sad, or they're upset, or whatever their emotion is when they come to me with this complaint. They typically didn't have fun because they didn't win, which I get. I love to win too. I definitely think I would take it different if someone with a 3-0 record came to me and said, hey, I just crushed everybody with this true name nemesis. I think you might need to put in, you know, some sac effects. I would probably take that quite differently than a losing player complaining about true name nemesis. I've just pulled him. I don't know why he's being my martyr, but true nemesis is just going to get the fish hook tonight. I would probably take that a little differently than if a loser came to me saying about it. You know, they're just upset. I would maybe look, admittedly, to make sure that I did have, you know, an appropriate amount of answers to them. But if I felt like I did, without hearing that same complaint multiple times, I probably wouldn't listen.
Sure, but if a player comes to you with more of an element of humility as to, like, why, you know, like you said, like, I just crushed all these players tonight with this card, like, it did really well for me, I performed well, that's going to have more bearing to you than, you know, because it has that humility of the person who is willing to step up and say, like, hey, this performed really well, maybe we should be looking at the top end of the cube versus, like, you know, the bottom end of the cube of, like, make things better, or, you know, maybe we need to talk about why this is, like you were saying, causing people to not have a good time, right? That's some important, you know, feedback that you can receive because there's some humility to it, right?
Not just humility, but I also think it's worth mentioning that everything I've said here has been framed assuming the person bringing the comment would be being respectful. Because as soon as they're just being inflammatory or overtly negative, or, you know, almost hostile in any of the things they're saying, I'm going to skip to just not caring what they say and ripping up their invite for next time. You know, that's not a good way to not only get the cube to be better or, you know, win my favoritism, because you're not going to, but you're also just going to make it worse for everyone else. That energy is just not conducive to a good time.
Potentially makes people not want to come back and either play with your specific cube group again too, right? If there's one person in the group that, or multiple that are only giving negative feedback and, you know, making potentially the time less enjoyable for everybody as a whole because their critique is all negative, there's nothing positive about it, and it, like you said, if it's more results driven for them specifically, then, you know, the group as a whole goes like, well, hey, you know, the goal here isn't then for everybody to have a good time, it's for you to crush us and win, right? Which isn't, you know, good as a whole for the group, and that's not a very healthy dynamic for the cube group moving forward, right? Because then people, you know, either don't want to come play with the group or, you know, maybe don't even want to draft the cube at all, specifically because how people are talking about it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Ryan, have you ever run into anything like that where, like, either, you know, somebody was giving so much negative feedback that, like, that they stopped either coming to your cube, you know, the drafts that you host, or that, you know, eventually you just kind of are like, you know, this person's not having fun with this. And, like, you even get to the point where maybe you stop inviting them to the cube drafts because, like, they're not having fun, right? Is that something that's ever happened?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. My house offers, as you know, a host of amenities here. So I've definitely had two or three interactions just within 2023 where I've had two players that are just not, unfortunately, welcome back to my house. They're still good friends of mine, but there were some interactions with other players that just wasn't very welcomed or wasn't very well received. And I take a huge amount of respect in the people that I've invited to my cube drafts, because oftentimes they're hosted someplace very private. So I really like to vet people out in the sense of knowing personalities, they won't clash, there won't be instances of this, because I'm really just looking for everyone to have a really positive experience time and give me just actual feedback on cards versus on poor interactions or poor player interactions. So yeah, unfortunately, there have definitely been some times where I've asked some players to just not come back, or I'll invite them under very specific terms or with very specific players, just to not have that kind of drama or issues in this room, or having that energy even be welcomed back.
So the feedback as a whole ends up leading to, you know, people like the cube as a whole, and like just the community falling apart, right? Because then players aren't, like you said, you don't feel like that you want to invite them. They necessarily maybe don't feel welcome because of how other people are responding to the negative comments they're making. And we kind of, again, continue to fragment and separate as like a cube community then, right? Because we're breaking again into smaller groups and people not able to have that fun and have that good time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, which is you know, it's not good. I mean, something that I'm a huge proponent of, and I'm sure will come up more as we have future episodes and talk, is I love building community around cube. Getting people together to cube, if it's my cube, if it's somebody else's cube, if it's like, hey, I know you really love cube, I need you to meet so-and-so because they love cube as well, or maybe a specific type of cube that you like. Fostering that community is a huge thing for me personally. I love doing that and moving forward. And, you know, when we hear things like this where people are saying that, like, hey, you know, I feel like I don't want to invite people, or people say that they don't want to come, you know, draft my cube because of some of the other people that are there, that feedback starts to become something that's not healthy for the overall cube community, which I think is really unfortunate, right? That people fall apart. I know that my big joke that I always make is that, you know, nerds will only show up if the temperature's perfect in the house. If you set it 1 degree too high, they're going to find a reason to not come, you know, draft your cube, play and experience your cube, right? Like how picky and fickle that nerds can be. And, you know, it starts to get hard. So what do you think about, like, I mean, somebody's giving you negative feedback, we're obviously not going to bend over backwards, right, to change things in our cube or even like how we're hosting our cube drafts or whatever, to make things more welcoming for people who aren't kind, right? Like if people aren't being kind in the way that they're giving us feedback and critique about our cubes, about the experience that they had, their suggestion about just anything to do with overall process, right? Like what role do you guys think that just being, I kind of said humble earlier, but kind is kind of the word I'm looking for. Like how much do you think that kindness matters when it comes to giving critique and feedback about cube?
I think it matters a extraordinary amount, to the point where I think it's worth pointing out that I don't, when I say feedback, I'm not even just talking about you coming to the cube designer or cube host or myself, you know, with complaints or criticisms of the cube, but the number of times I've heard negative energy at the table about a player critiquing another person's draft, another person's deck, another person's, you know, thought process on why they took a card, while they're deck building, critiquing their picks or the order of them if they start talking about, you know, the order in which they picked cards. Even that sort of feedback, I'm listening, you know. I don't know if everyone else does that, but when I start to hear that sort of negativity at my table, I'm again reaching for your invite. Depending on how hostile it is or how negative it is, I might talk to you first outside of the group. No one's coming to these events to be picked on, and not the cube host and their cube that they've put all the hours and time and effort into to supply this experience for you, nor the players. There are fetishes and places to go if you like being bullied, but I don't think a cube draft is one of them. So I think it plays a huge role, more so than most people talk about.
Sure. I mean, I would hope not, right? Like being bullied, right, is not good or fun for anybody. Ryan, what were you? Yeah. Did you have something you wanted to add on to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that I think a lot of people have to remember that these cubes are our babies in some ways, right? We have spent hours curating these. We have spent just hours discussing these, thinking of them, providing experience for other players. So we We would love to have that same level of respect when we're inviting you to play with these cards, right? We want you to have a go happy lucky experience. And if you have a negative experience, I will definitely pull you to the side and ask you or talk to you about it. The players that I have basically asked to not come back have, I said, like, hey, if you're willing to apologize under these circumstances, I'm completely fine under these things. But I don't want that kind of negative energy to be invited into the Cube community, because we're looking for positivity. We're looking to grow it, and we're looking to make sure that this is a welcoming and fun time for everyone.
No, for sure. And honestly, this discussion has had me thinking about something that I think is a great question to ask you guys. And this is something I've never done before. Now I'm considering trying it in the future. Is making some statement at the beginning of the Cube draft beforehand to like get people into either the right mindset or to say like, hey, you know, negative comments aren't going to be welcome here tonight, that we need to keep this positive. Do we think that may be something that might be important for people hosting Cube drafts to bring up or discuss with the cubers before we even start cubing, to like get people in the right mindset to make sure that the overall experience is good for everybody? Like, what do you guys think about that? Is that something that maybe should be a discussion point before, like, a, you know, the turn zero conversation that we have in Commander, but with Cube, about like, hey, this has to be a kind place tonight when we're discussing Cube before we even start? Like, what do you guys think about that?
I feel like that's not done at any other Magic event that I've ever been to. I feel like if you're playing with a group of people that you feel like you need to do that with, maybe reassess the group of people. That could be harsh, but I feel like I'm just going to curate the group of people that are involved with my cube and involved with my space. And, you know, I'll build the community out of the people that want to be a part of it. But I mean, I know Ryan is the same way. I've been to thousands of Magic tournaments all over this country, and I don't recall them ever having a be nice speech. And that's because there's just a certain amount of common decency that is expected out of people that are interacting with strangers. And in this case, people you probably have been around or known already, if you're at a shop or a person's house cubing, it should go even more without saying. Now, obviously, there is definitely something to be said for not every cube drafter I know speaks about not talking on picks or something like that, which I think that would be something worth discussing, because most drafts will have some sort of, you know, is there anyone here who hasn't drafted before? Here's the protocol, here's the do's and don'ts. You know, like, we go over zone drafting, but maybe adding something about not discussing your picks, or flashing the card you thought they should have taken back to them. These kind of, like,
telling players that table talk is not going to be acceptable, right? Up front, right? That, like, if you're making picks or you're discussing picks, like, it shouldn't be, you know, we wanted, you know, right, that's like the turn zero conversation we have is something we go over to make sure that people have a better time and that there isn't any confusion or any, you know, like you said, like, middle of a draft, bad feelings from anybody when somebody starts doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's closer to where I'd want it to be. Not so much like, please don't be negative or don't call anybody a name, because I shouldn't have to tell you that. Maybe if I have a 10-year-old in the draft, I would remind them to be nice. But if you're if you're an adult, I'm just going to expect that you know how to behave and not try and parent you. I'd be a pretty strict parent anyway. You wouldn't like that. So that's just where I stand on it.
Okay.
Basic player code conduct, right? Just I think it does. There is, under some Magic verbatim, that there is some yes. Basic player code yep. conduct to be not kind but respectful, I think is the exact thing. So I kind of agree completely with Jesse on this one, Alex, where I think the people that we especially host in our cubes are completely fine to not have that discussion. Now, this being hosted at a tournament where we're inviting a bunch of different people, which is always welcomed, and we will definitely have those things in the future, and that could possibly be a place where we'd have that discussion. Circling back though to Jesse, I am straight up stealing a couple things from him. So zone drafting, picking, and then hypothetically team drafting and or flashing picks. All of these things will be added to the next cube draft at my that it will be happening for me for sure. Those are all excellent pickups, especially if we are team drafting and we know the teams beforehand and or after.
Yeah, team draft so, definitely adds a layer of you can't be talking about your picks for sure.
Exactly.
Well, and team drafting is kind of another one of those places where, like, cube drafts goes from being more casual to being more competitive. And so that's where, like you were saying, like, Jesse, I mean, both of you guys have definitely more experience playing in competitive events than I do. I have a little bit of that experience, which I'm sure will come up again as we keep talking about this in the future, but you guys definitely have a lot more of that experience. And so Cube being that more casual place that people come to play, you know, team drafts are more competitive, but because it's so much casualer, I mean, is that, you know, what level of competitiveness do we think, you know, like you said, that people are going to have that mindset of, but do we almost need to kind of disencourage that mindset a little bit just to make sure that people have a good time, or what are thoughts on that?
Personally, I don't think it needs to be disincentivized or, you know, I don't want to say discouraged. I'm not sure if that's an English word, but
making them up here as we go.
Right. I will say that Cube is flexible enough that as long as you're being respectful, as he mentioned, you know, if you're adhering to the player code of conduct in the WotC comprehensive rules, which is pretty easy to do, don't be a jerk. Well, then any level of competition is going to be fine, right? If you sit down and you want to do the wacky, silly blue-green ramp that only wins a fourth yearling gets off two talismans, live your life, King. Live your literal best life. You know, if you're trying to be the hyper efficient, you know, turn three Underworld Breach Lotus win the game Storm deck, and you know you're trying to stick-so this three round draft, live your life. No one, I think, showed up to this. No one should show up to a Cube draft expecting to win every game or expecting to lose every game. You should just show up expecting to play cool Magic cards with cool people and have a cool time. And if that's your goal, then I don't think how you approach it matters very much, so long as you do so always in the same state of respect of your fellow player. Or, you know, if they're not playing, still people in your shop or your space or your host. Because don't get it twisted. If they're not in my Cube draft, you don't get to be rude to them. So, yeah, I think competitive is fine. If anything, I would say that personally, with my competitive background, I love to encourage the competitive side. To help people get better at Magic. I love when, you know, right now I feel like I've already kind of accidentally stumbled into this mentor role, sort of, because everyone at the shop I'm playing at the most right now keeps wanting my input on how to rebuild or change their decks. And that's great to me, because a lot of these people are really good Magic players, but I have a lot of experience, and I love to share it. I love to see people grow. And the fact that they're willing to shows me that they're coming with the intent of having a good time and improving, which is a win-win. But you don't have to show up to improve.
It's usually, that's little absolutely bit. You've definitely required. Been getting more of the 3-0s here recently at those Monday Night Cube drafts, higher than anybody else here recently. Do you think that has a little bit of a role to play in that as well, why people are kind of like, hey, this guy's winning, let's go, you know, ask him questions and look up to him kind of thing? Do you think that... I'm teasing you just because I think that that's part of the reason definitely why you've started to fall into that role a little bit more. It's just because, you know, people start to seek advice from the players that are winning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm not even like trying that's why I didn't say it was because of that.
Hey, listen, I'll give you the props. But how they approach you and how they ask you about that and, the level of kindness that they bring to those conversations, it definitely impacts how you're going to either help them build their deck or help them improve, right?
Right, I mean, that's it's almost a black and white. Like, it's either you're going to be respectful about it, or I'm not going to help you. There's not a middle ground for me. I may be a moral subjectivist, and not to segue, but being nice is easy. And the joke about it not costing anything is true. So if you come at me sideways, I'm not going to offer you my help. I may offer you advice on how to be kinder in the future. But help you build your deck after being rude? Not so much. Or again, you ain't got to be rude to me for playing Alex's cube and you come to me wanting to rebuild your deck because his crappy cube didn't let you draft something good. Probably not rebuilding your deck for you. Or giving you tips or asking, you know, what's the last two cards to cut? Your attitude. That's what you should cut.
Yeah.
So, I definitely think that kindness, this is a big jump back to three questions ago, but kindness goes a long way.
Ryan, do you have any other thoughts on that as we've been going on this for just a little bit while before we kind of wrap this up? The final thoughts on just people, you know, anywhere from like we started with making cuts and stuff on cubes and you know, what cards should be added and stuff to player input to kind of talking a little bit more, I think, here about overall just table manners and just things that happen during a cube draft. Do you guys have final thoughts starting with Ryan about everything that we've been talking about here tonight.
I think the biggest, you and Jesse have really hit on it. It's just being respectful and just being a kind player. And again, offering your feedback or offering positive feedback in a non-negative way is huge. And I think if we can just keep resonating that, the community can continue to grow in heaps and waves. So I think that is all.
Jesse, any final thoughts?
I think I would just close to say that if you struggle with how to behave at any of these events, or if you're quite curious about whether a question sounds sideways, always pose it like it was your cube. Imagine you were the one that had spent 200, 2,000, 20,000 hours, depending on how long you've been curating cubes. These are not numbers I'm making up. Putting these cards together and sleeving them and spending the hundreds, tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the authenticity of the cube and whether it's powered or not. If this was your baby, how would you want to be approached about it? You can not only hurt feelings, but you can also just really start to throw shade on something that means a lot to somebody. Don't do that. Just don't do that. No.
Not cool, not kind, right?
Hashtag so, don't do that.
Yeah. Hashtag don't do that. Well, I know this was a little bit more of a soapboxy kind of conversation to start out with the first episode, but my thought and figure was, if heck, we only ever make one, episode of the show ever, let's talk about something that could be beneficial for the Cube community as a whole. Something I don't think that's been talked about a ton. I mean, obviously there's been some conversations in some of the other podcasts and some of the stuff on Reddit, but the internet being the sometimes overly negative place that it is, try to talk a little bit more about, some kindness and some ways that we approach stuff than others was kind of what I at least wanted to start with this podcast. We're certainly going to be talking about other subjects, other things to do with Cube. Some conversations will obviously be more archetype or card specific or different type of Cube. Tonight, I know we were talking a lot about more competitive cubes or powered cubes. Because that's kind of a little bit more what the three of us draft, either in person or on MTGO. But obviously we're going to be talking about other things. And if you, the listeners, have feedback about this topic, about this subject or other things you wanted us to talk about, we are definitely open to that. So I want to thank everybody for joining us for today's discussion. The show does have an email if you'd like to reach out to us, which you can find in the show notes. It's squaresthatcube@gmail.com. You could reach out to us with feedback about this episode or suggestions for content that you may want us to do in the future. You can also find us on the Pacific Northwest Cube Draft Facebook group, PNW Cube Drafts Facebook. We, like we said, are from the Portland area, but we've been trying to work to help build the Cube community here in Portland, up in Seattle, and just kind of all over the west part of the United States here. We talk about Cube frequently in that Facebook group, as well as the Discord that we have that's attached to it. And so rather than making a whole other community for this show, we figured let's just tie everything into the place where a lot of us are already having these conversations. But Jesse and Ryan, what other things do you want to try to do with the show as we move forward? Do you guys have goals, have intentions of things that you'd like to do with this as we potentially keep talking about some more Cube?
I mean, I'm really expecting to be a huge rock star and live in a hilltop mansion, driving 16 cars. So, that's where I'm trying to get. I just want to become the biggest podcaster of all time. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty
there
much
we go. We're going for
sums me up,
rock,
I think.
Riches and fame. Ryan, how about you? Is there anything else that you want to let people know about?
Well, I'll let Jesse take in all the, what are those called? Is it called proceeds when the song's continuously played? No, that's what it's called.
Royalties.
Yeah. I'll let Jesse take all the royalties. The biggest goal for me, with this podcast, if I may, is to grow the Cube community, not only, just the PNW Cube community, but just the Cube community in general. I love meeting new players. I love meeting new faces. If you guys see me at any tournament, please come up and say hi. I've got a pretty unique laugh. It's pretty memorable. And, I just always am excited to get player feedback. So if you guys have some suggestions or things that you would like to see or have us discuss, we'd love to see that, or please let us know about it. And I we'd love to discuss that, I'm sure. But no, biggest thing, growing the Cube community and just getting more Cube content and Cube conversations going.
Awesome.
If you see Ryan out of water, come up with a cup and just splash him.
Probably not. That's probably not the experience he wants to have, right?
Yeah. Not with my Cube on me. But if I'm in the water, please splash away.
He's in his home.
Right.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining me and talking here on this first episode. We look forward to being back to talk about more Cube, and we hope that everybody has a great rest of their week until we're back. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.